Welcome to the Rust Belt Rundown, brought to you by Rust Belt Recruiting. This podcast is designed to shine a light on the meaningful work being done in Northeast Ohio and the surrounding region. We will convene manufacturing executives and Northeast Ohio business leaders for candid discussions about their business, regional happenings, industry trends, entrepreneurship, and more. Now, let's get running on the Rundown.
Welcome, everyone, to episode 67 of the Rust Belt Rundown, a production by Workforce LLC. I'm your host, Paul O'Connor, and on this episode, we are joined by Paul Reitzer of Marketing AI Institute. Paul, happy Friday, OU alum. Welcome to the podcast, man.
Go Bobcats. It's good to be with you.
Go Bobcats. I had to talk to a Miami alum the other week that it was that podcast won't be as good as this one. But let's jump in, man. We got a lot of exciting things to talk about, obviously, with the main focus being AI. But I want to go back to the year 2016. Mm-hmm. It's hard to even imagine that year right now and where we all were. But you were way ahead of the curve in terms of starting a marketing AI company in 2016, at least in my opinion. When you started it, what was the reaction from the industry? Was there pushback? Was there acceptance? Was there excitement? Was there, what the hell is this? Why are you starting? Like, what was the overall feel when you decided to start that? Because now in 2023, yeah, it makes all the sense in the world. But then it was early.
Yeah, it was very early. So I don't know. I mean, I'd started researching AI in 2011 myself. And I was just trying to, because you mentioned OU, I came out of the journalism school. I'm not a machine learning engineer, data scientist, technologist. So I was running my marketing agency at the time. And I had actually just written my first book, The Marketing Agency Blueprint. And there was nothing about AI in that book. But I wrote that manuscript April to June 2011. And that February is when IBM Watson won on Jeopardy. And so my whole reason I got into AI was actually just a curiosity about what was IBM Watson, how did it work, that it was like seemed to be understanding human language, being able to answer things. Like, I was just intrigued by it. And so once I kind of dug in and understood a little bit more about how it worked and what it was actually doing, my question became, well, could I do that in marketing? Like, clients would come to us and say, you know, we have $100,000, we have $1 million, whatever it was, and we need some goal achieved. We need more leads, we need to grow our audience, we need to build our brand, we need to reduce churn, like whatever it was. And so what I'd become convinced of was that the human mind was actually incapable of solving that challenge. That when I graduated from college in 2000, there was like 10 ways to spend marketing dollars. By 2011, we had now mobile, we had social, we had blogging, we had all these things. There was like 10,000 ways to spend that money. And so I was just trying to think, like, could this Watson thing, whatever it is, actually help me predict how we should allocate budgets for clients? That was like my whole purpose of trying to solve it initially. And then by the time I kind of like wrote my second book in 2014, it was about talent, tech, and strategy in marketing and business. And there's a small section about AI in the technology chapters. And so of a 50,000 word manuscript, there's probably 700 to 1,000 words about AI. And what I did is I just kind of shared my theory that there would eventually be a marketing intelligence engine, that all this data we had coming in from all these different sources would eventually get pooled into this AI, and the AI would be able to make predictions about what to do next, about what to spend, what campaigns to run, what to write, all these things. It was kind of like a theory that I thought was going to be possible in the not too distant future. And so we were starting to look for AI to use in our agency, and it just wasn't there. So as soon as the book came out in sometime mid to late 2014, everybody wanted me to do speaking gigs about the AI part. Like, no one was asking me about anything else in the book. They just wanted the AI talk. And so I went and did a talk to the government on like five arms of the military of the government on how to use AI in recruiting. I keynoted the MarTech conference 2015. I did South by Southwest. Like, I just started traveling the world doing talks about this theoretical intelligence engine. So I knew on the outskirts, people were interested in the topic. And by 2016, I'd become just obsessed with it. And like everything I was doing, I wasn't even doing like running the agency, really. I was like trying to solve for AI because I thought that was going to reinvent the agency. And I just didn't know how or when. So we decided, like, well, let's just create this AI Institute. We'll create a blog, just a separate, it was just a DBA of my agency. It wasn't a separate company yet. And let's just start researching and writing. Let's just figure out the story of AI. So we started interviewing entrepreneurs who were building AI tools. We started doing all kinds of research, trying to follow along on the developments in the AI research world, and then synthesize that to non-technical people. So it's like, let's just write about it and try and explain what it means to the average person. And so by 2018, we had about 7,000 subscribers to the newsletter. And it was a lot of like analysts, VC firms, well-known angel investors, some, you know, brands and agencies. But it was like we were building a following, but it wasn't much. Definitely the very, very, very early adopters. And for some reason, I decided like this is going to happen really fast. Like we need to turn this into a business and we got to launch a conference. So I decided to launch the Marketing AI Conference in 2019 because I thought we were getting close to a tipping point. And it worked okay. I mean, we had 300 people from 12 countries come to Cleveland for that first conference. And I think we might have been on a trajectory to create much broader awareness and adoption, but then the pandemic hit and we kind of had to take a step back. So I guess the short answer is it was a little nuts. I thought it was going to happen faster than it did. I ended up selling my agency in 2021 because I read a book called Genius Makers by Cade Metz. And it was in April of 2021. I was on spring break with my family. And I realized in that moment as I was reading it, what had happened, that I had overestimated how quickly AI was going to change the world, but I had underestimated the total impact it was going to have. And so I decided in that moment, I remember I was on a walk and I came back and I told my wife, like, I'm going to sell the agency. Like, I have to figure this out now. Like, I now understand why everyone wasn't doing AI over the last 10 years while I was studying it. I get it now. And I was convinced the tipping point was like right within reach. And it just ended up being ChatGPT was the moment.
Let's stay on that. Can you say that you overestimated and underestimated? Can you say that one more time? Because I think that's super valuable for our audience.
Yeah. So I overestimated how quickly it would happen. So when I started the AI Institute in 2016, I was convinced that AI was going to be in everything, like all business software, all marketing software, sales, service, everything within probably like a 3 to 5 year span. But by 2021, like it would just be ubiquitous. It would be every AI would be everywhere. So I overestimated how quickly the awareness and adoption would happen, but I underestimated the total impact it was going to have on society. Because Genius Makers basically tells the story of a breakthrough in what's called deep learning, like a subset of AI that tries to teach the machine human-like capabilities of language, of vision, reasoning, you know, thinking. So there was a breakthrough in 2011 that led to everything we're seeing today. You know, the billions of dollars getting poured into AI research labs. They basically realized that deep learning was possible at scale and that it could be commercialized in applications like translation, transcription, speech to text, text to speech, you know, the ability for these things to write stuff. Like that became within reach in 2011 to these AI researchers. And then everything just became a land grab for talent. It actually became a huge play. Like Google bought DeepMind, Meta, which now Demis Hassabis, the founder of DeepMind, runs AI at Google now. Meta went and recruited Jan LeCun from New York University. He still today runs the research AI research lab at Meta. So basically all the key players in AI started getting acquired and pulled in, and then they then built these massive research facilities today. So it's kind of fascinating because I just kept looking around like, why isn't everybody talking about this? Like, this is so apparent what's going to happen. And yet there was major software, like publicly traded software companies that were totally asleep at the wheel, like just no vision for it, didn't see this coming. And I'm still kind of dumbfounded by that. Like when you go back and you look at all the signals, it's just a follow the money thing. Like look at all the money that was getting poured in. I mean, Facebook, Google, Amazon, Microsoft, they had thousands of AI researchers working at those companies. Like it was so apparent to me what was going to happen. It was just a matter of the technology having its moment, which is, like I said, what ChatGPT became.
Can you talk about, whether it's in the marketing world, maybe it's a two-part question, the internal marketing reaction and then the overall just our world's reaction to AI, and how the vast majority of people that don't understand it or are not as intertwined as you are, have a big fear of it, right? Like the headlines, yeah. So many headlines are AI is going to take your job, AI is replacing this, whatever. Can you talk about maybe how the marketing world is reacting and then how that differs from maybe the average, you know, person in a non-marketing role?
Yeah, I think in general, you know, I would say marketers are usually going to be more of the leading edge of the awareness and adoption. And our experience up until ChatGPT was that they generally didn't care. Like they were, my assumption has always been that it's an abstract topic. There's preconceived ideas of it being sci-fi and too technical. And what most people knew was what they would see in shows and movies. And I think that what happened in 2022 was in spring, OpenAI released DALL-E 2, the image generation technology that they just this week released DALL-E 3 of. And then Midjourney came out and a couple of these other image generation tools. So what changed in early 2022 was you and I and anybody else, non-technical people, could go in and use an AI tool and see a result and have a wow factor. So we started seeing a change in perception and an interest from marketers and really the general world, because I could sit down and show my family at Thanksgiving dinner, like, look at this thing, like it's creating images, like a family at Thanksgiving, like AI became tangible to people. And then you could start to like see people's minds go and connect the dots of, wait a second, like that's what artists do, or that's what, you know, when ChatGPT came out, that's what writers do. Like all of a sudden AI was here and it was a tangible thing. So in 2022, we democratized access to image generation and language generation technology. And so that created, I would say, just a much greater urgency, especially in the marketing world, to figure out what this stuff was and what it was actually capable of. So for us, it was a long, arduous process to make people care. Like in November of 2021, I created this Million Marketer Challenge for us. And the premise was there's 11 million marketers in the world. I thought if we could introduce AI to a million of them, like roughly 10%, and then get 10% of them to take the next step and 10% of them to actually like care and really go seek this stuff out, that we could eventually build a group of people in the marketing industry that move the industry forward. So, you know, we launched an intro to AI class. I teach every 3 weeks for free. That was one way we were doing it. We have a podcast, we have a newsletter, like we have all these free things. That's like, let's just figure out ways to get this in front of people. And we used to get like 300 registrants per intro to AI class. And after ChatGPT, like in this year, I think we're averaging probably 1200, and we don't even advertise it anymore. So like we used to run LinkedIn or Facebook lead ads. And so half of the 300 people would probably come in through lead ads. They were crap leads and crap contacts, and, you know, attendance rates were bad. And then this year, we don't even run ads anymore, and we'll get 12 to 1500 people registering. I think we had 1700 might have been the high point or something like that in one of the recent ones. So now all of a sudden, everyone is like trying to figure this out. But I would say, like, for people listening, you're not behind at all. Like, even in, we just did a study of 900 marketers who are followers of the AI Institute. So you would think these would be like the foremost, like on the edge. 45% say they're still just experimenting with it. And that was the largest percentage. Like, how are you using AI tools personally, basically? I think it was like 20 some percent said it was infused into their daily workflow. 6% said they couldn't live without them. So most people, like the largest percentage of people, are still just trying to figure out. And I would put myself in that bucket. Like, I haven't changed any of my daily workflow per se because of AI. I use it in an experimental way a lot, really cool things. It's not replacing anything I was doing. It's more like augmenting. Like, I'll give you a quick example. I read a lot of AI research reports. They're very scientific, very dense. I don't understand 80% of what's in them sometimes, but they're really important because they're really good at indicating where the research is going and where the technology is going to go. And so if you can follow those, you can actually see around the corners a little bit. So what you do is you could take the PDF, let's say it's a 70-page scientific document, upload it to Anthropic Claude, which can take 75,000 words of context in a prompt, and say, summarize this for me in 10 to 15 bullet points at a seventh grade level. Yes. And then if it's like you still understand, say, can you do this as a golf analogy? Like, you can just like, and then you get the output. It's like, this paper needs to be read in full. Like, this is really important. So it's just things like that that I've found to work AI in. But again, I'm not really like changing my life. I'm not cutting 5 hours out of my workday or anything like that because of it.
So let's stay on that. You said 6% of the marketers that you poll it's changed their daily.
Yeah, couldn't live without it.
Couldn't live without it. Do you know what tools they are using and or what tools will 50% of marketers be using in the next 24 months?
I mean, GPT-4 is the go-to. I mean, like in January, there was a data point, I don't know if it was Bloomberg or Reuters, I don't remember who cited it, but it was like there was 100 million users of GPT-4, ChatGPT in general. GPT-4, ChatGPT Plus is $20 a month. People ask me, is it worth it? I said, I always say like, it's the greatest value in software history. Like, what do you mean? Is it worth it? Like, it's like having a PhD assistant with you 24 hours a day. Like as an entrepreneur, I use it to like help me think about things I have no one to talk about with, like building equity plans for employees or conceiving of business models, like stuff you could talk to your attorney about, but your attorney's going to cost you $500 an hour. Like, I just want a sounding board for ideas. And it's like, I don't know. I would pay thousands a month to have someone like that, that I could like at 11 o'clock at night when I'm trying to think of something that I could just, what do I do? And that's what it's become for me, is this ideation engine and just like a strategy assistant. So, I mean, I think that writing tools, I guess the general category of generative AI text tools, whether it's Claude or Bard or ChatGPT or InflectionPy, those are probably the thing that most people are using. And then certainly in the design world, like image generation tools, I think video generation tools are becoming, you know, much better, and they're going to get a lot of usage moving into 2024. But most likely ChatGPT is probably where most people are spending their time.
Can I play devil's advocate a little? And it's not even me. It's really just repeating what, you know, creatives or artists or painters or, you know, there have been pushback from that side of the, you know, proverbial house around, wait a minute, like, why are we okay with allowing AI to create this art when we have been doing it? It's not the same, right? Yes, they can do it in 10 seconds, but like, is that as valuable as someone spending 4 hours on a painting? And I just want to get your thoughts on that. Like, it's one thing to like write a blog, right? I don't think anyone has any ethical questions or issues around, did a human read this, write this? And does it matter if I read it? Does it matter if I went down a lead gen form on LinkedIn, if it was all created by AI? I don't think that matters. But is there some sort of, almost like, should we pause on the art side of it and kind of like have a little bit more in-depth discussion about what we're doing to the arts? Or are we okay? Like, is this just kind of the next iteration of how things work?
I mean, unfortunately, we don't really get that choice. It's out of the box. So my wife's an artist. My daughter's an artist. I've like the painting right back there is a painting of my daughter's. She's 11. When Dolly came out, I was upstairs in my upstairs office at the time, and I had to walk downstairs and show it to my wife and explain it. And that was a really hard moment for me, like to see what it was capable of doing and to have to actually explain to an artist, like everything just changed in the art world and here's what's going to happen next. And then to have to show it to my daughter and have her walk out of the room and not talk to me about it for a month. Like, it's not an easy thing for people to accept. I'm a writer. Like, it's hard to accept it can write better than me in some cases, more creatively than I can. So the way I think about it is, I think that authentic human content will win eventually. Like, I think what's happened is when anyone can create anything, you commoditize the value of it. So if you and I can both go in and create a digital painting that's just amazing, like whatever you want to imagine, the universe, like, you know, some beautiful thing of a galaxy, and it's just awe-inspiring, and like maybe we, like, let's say we go to sell that and we have two paintings next to each other and they're both just amazing, and maybe I like painting A better than painting B, and painting A was the AI one, but I didn't know that. Well, then if you tell me painting A was an AI one and painting B was a human, I'm buying the human one. Like, I'm still impressed by the AI one, but I'm buying the human, and I'm going to say, well, what's the story behind this? Like, why did you do the galaxy? Like, what's my dad loved looking at the stars when I was a little kid. And so I've always been inspired. It's like, cool. Give me that one. Like, I want the human experience. I want the story. I want the emotion that went into it. So the analogy I give is AI has been superhuman at chess for like a decade. Like, you can beat any grandmaster in chess. Have you ever heard of an AI playing an AI in chess, or anyone wanting to see an AI play an AI in chess? No. Chess grandmasters have gotten better at their craft because they play against AIs and they learn new approaches and new moves, and then they play each other, but they're being, in essence, trained. It's almost like a coach to them. And I think that's when it gets, what's going to happen in a lot of instances. Like, the AI is going to become superhuman at some of this stuff. At the end of the day, like, we still want to interact with humans. We still want to appreciate things humans create. We want to understand the stories behind them. And AI doesn't have those things. It doesn't have emotions. It simulates emotions. It doesn't have experiences. It simulates them. It doesn't have empathy. It simulates it. Like, it's all a simulation. And I think the authentic stuff is going to matter a lot in the future. So that's why I keep advising brands. I was like, double down on authentic human content that's not easily faked, like live events, podcast conversations like this, unscripted stuff, editorials. Like, do the things where it's obvious there's humans behind it that have feelings and emotions and experiences.
That's helpful. That's a little bit more reassuring than I thought.
Yeah.
You know, because it's, you read doomsday articles most of the time, right? You read, yeah, the sky is falling articles, and it's nice to have someone who is an expert in it explain that may not be the case. So that's helpful. I hope our audience gets a lot out of that. Let's transition to your thoughts on how AI can potentially affect the manufacturing industry, whether that be internal operations or content or logistics. Like, have you seen, or what do you think we will see in the coming years with how AI affects manufacturing?
Well, I mean, certainly on like the actual manufacturing of products side, we've seen robotics play an increasing role over the last decade. Like, that's not that new. They're just getting really good at object recognition, the like mobility and dexterity. Like, they're just improving, and you're going to see robotics continue to play a much bigger role in all areas of manufacturing. I think manufacturing, though, like any other business, like, the way I think about AI is you can build a smarter version of any company in any industry, and you can look at marketing, sales, service, ops, HR, finance, legal, accounting, like any function of business. What you're doing is you're looking at them and saying, okay, are there repetitive data-driven tasks we can intelligently automate? We can use AI to assist in the doing of that task. Is there a chance to enhance creativity, innovation, product design, decision-making? So there's these things that are universal to every company in every industry. And so what we teach people is you basically just look at existing processes and workflows. You look at existing roles within the organization and the tactical things that they do. And you pretty much say, can AI assist this person? Can we achieve 10 or 20% efficiency gains? Can we improve productivity by 30%? And that's what you're looking for. And you, there are ways to do that across every function of business. So, for example, I don't know, something everybody does is like reporting at the end of the month, like a narrative of the KPIs were this, our data was up, our data was down. And usually somebody, sometimes it's a data analyst, often it's someone who isn't trained in data analysis, like a marketer, that's supposed to look at web traffic and email data and social data and all this marketing analytics data. And they write a report or create a presentation for the C-suite that looks at it for 2 minutes, and then they move on. So like, somebody's Sunday night at the end of every month is 3 hours trying to write this report that nobody's going to read. And that happens in almost every function of business. That is not a human task in the future. Like, the AI will do that. And the human will basically look over what the AI outputs and be like, this makes a ton of sense. So there's just some functions where, again, it's data-driven and repetitive. The AI is going to be better at humans at every data-driven repetitive task. It's just a matter of time. So like, another example would be as a marketer, as an entrepreneur, I build pivot tables all the time, like trying to analyze data, whatever it is. It could be employee data, it could be customer data, it could be product data. And every single time it's like, how do you build a pivot table again? I just you lose that muscle. For some reason in my head, it's just this block of how to build a pivot table and analyze it. I won't have to. I'll just go and be like, ask a question of the data. Like, just this week, Copilot Microsoft announced Copilot is going to be available to enterprise customers November 1st. Copilot's going to have like a PhD level data analyst in Excel. You can just be able to ask it whatever you want. And so that's it. Like, you can do that in ChatGPT now. That code interpreter, which became, changed the name to Advanced Data Analysis, I think is what they call the tool. Didn't do a very good job of renaming it. It analyzes data at like a PhD level. It writes Python code like for $20 a month as part of the ChatGPT Plus subscription. So I just, and this is the part where I struggle, and we get into like talent and recruiting and all these things. Like, I don't know a CEO, and I've talked with a lot of really big companies that have a clue about this stuff, that are like building in change management for what this means to staffing and talent and reskilling and upskilling and hiring. And like, they're not looking a year or two out and thinking about what does knowledge work look like. And so what I tell people, again, in manufacturing or any industry, is in the United States, there's 132 million full-time jobs. 100 million of them are knowledge workers. 12 million of them work for private equity-owned companies. Private equity-owned companies cut costs. Like, it's what they do. AI is going to affect every single knowledge worker in the world. Within 1 to 2 years, we're under the assumption at least 80% of what knowledge workers do will be AI-assisted to some degree, meaning every piece of software we're using 2 years from now in business is going to have some component of AI in it. And whether you go seek AI tools or not, they're going to be there, just like it's in Spotify and Netflix and Gmail and Amazon and Tesla's. Like, your life is all AI-assisted. You don't maybe think about it that way, but it is. That's what's going to happen in business. So you're going to have all these AI tools across every business function. And I don't know a single organization in the world right now that is really preparing for that.
So if you're 18 years old and you love marketing, what would you advise someone to do? To go to a 4-year degree, to go get an internship, to go to a community comp? Like, what, now what?
Well, I mean, trade labor is very safe. Like, if you like working in the field, working with your hands, like, that's a wonderful career path. And there's going to be massive demand for that talent, and people are going to need workers. And that's an admirable thing to do. Like, so I think trade jobs are going to be way more valued in the future and appreciated. And they don't have enough people already in those professions. So I think that's like a safe path. Like, AI is probably not going to be in the field doing things like that. When you think more about the knowledge work side, though, I think liberal arts degrees are going to take on greater value than like computer science, for example. Like, I think a major in philosophy may be worth more than a computer science degree in 10 years. What we need are people with diverse knowledge about humanities, about English language or any language, wherever you're studying, mathematics, like fundamentals. Like, you still need the fundamentals, because you're going to have to understand how the machines are doing what they're doing. And you're going to have to understand like what remains uniquely human in this equation. And it might be a moving target of what the career path looks like. But what I think to be true is, like, we still need this broad liberal arts background. And then you need to be experimenting with these tools all the time. Because no matter who you follow and what books you read, what podcasts you listen to, you can only connect so many dots. The best way to figure out what your career is going to be is go use GPT-4, go play around with Anthropic Claude, go test, you know, Pi, go play with Midjourney, like, go use the tools, but use them for things you do every day. Like, oh, okay, I like writing poetry, or I like, I'm in a profession where I'm going to be writing a bunch of like proposals and emails and research papers or whatever it is, and use AI to help you do those things and like see what's possible. Because most companies still don't know what careers look like a year or two from now. They're not thinking that far ahead yet. And I think a lot of cases, it's going to be an individual, it's going to come like from the bottom up to identify new opportunities within companies and say, I think we need someone that does this. Like, I'll give you an example. We're one of the things we recommend every every brand is to build an AI council. Like, create a group of people within the company who are really curious about this stuff. They don't have to like AI. They don't even have to like be using it per se, but they're just curious. And maybe they're afraid of it a little bit. And get a cross-functional team of people. So get someone from HR, someone from ops, someone from marketing, and have them meet regularly and explore this topic and try and figure out what does it mean. And like one meeting might be like, let's do a book club together. Another one might be, let's look at a couple of key roles in the organization and try and project out what are these roles going to do in 2 years when the AI can do all this stuff. You need those happening. And then I think out of those councils and those early initiatives, you can start to identify roles. So I know of one company that started with 2 people in February in an AI council. Today it has 30, and they're considering putting like a full-time employee leading the AI council. So like a career path emerges for someone who's like, did they think coming out of college 2 years ago, they're going to be running an AI council at a tech company? Like, no, but that's what's going to happen is people are just going to be curious and then bring it to leadership and say, hey, I think this is what's going to happen in manufacturing. Like I've found X, Y, and Z examples of this. Like, I think we should be working on this. And they're like, okay, can you do it? Like who else would do this?
Can you, so you mentioned about CEOs that you talk to CEOs all the time and that they're not focused on this or, you know, it's something on their radar, but you know, they haven't really, you know, dove in. Besides, and I want to talk about the conference. So besides having all these CEOs sign up for your conference, what do they do? What should they do?
They need to find someone within the organization to spearhead the research and assessment. Yeah, it could be the council. It could be a point person. My general feeling right now, though, is and where I see it kind of going wrong is the natural person to put in charge of this is the CIO or like some technical person.
Yeah.
And I think that those people need to be heavily involved for sure. But they have other concerns like privacy and security and risk. And like they're not always the natural person to think bigger picture, change management, strategy, impact on talent, impact on culture. Like I see this as the technology solution is almost the least interesting part of AI to me. It is the impact it's going to have on everything that happens in the organization and all the people in the organization. And so you need a communications person involved because they're the ones that are going to have to figure out how to message all of this to people when they're afraid of this technology. You're going to need people that can craft like responsible AI principles that guide the decisions the organization is going to make around its use of AI, generative AI policies that dictate, are we even allowed to use ChatGPT like to do things or, people are unbeknownst to leadership. Sometimes they'll take transcripts out of Zoom and drop it into ChatGPT and ask it to summarize the transcript. Well, maybe there's confidential information in that transcript. There's some proprietary information about the organization and people don't realize that you just gave it to OpenAI. Like it's training their next foundational model because that's the terms of use. So there's so little known about how to properly use these tools. And I don't see a CIO alone being able to consider all of those ramifications. They have full-time jobs keeping the company safe and the data safe. Like this isn't their domain.
Yep. Interesting. So tell us about the conference, September 2024. Is it the 10th or the 12th?
Yes. So we're marketing AI conference is in Cleveland. It'll be our 5th year, I think. So we had 200 people in 2022. We had 700 in 2023. Ooh. We're expecting 1500 plus in 2024, maybe more. It's hard to project out a year from now for anything. So yeah, it's fantastic. This year was pretty special. I mean, it was a great, like it definitely had a community feel. It felt like everyone was kind of at a similar point where they're just trying to figure it out and want to help each other and find other people who are interested in this topic. So, you know, hopefully we're really building a place where people feel like they can come back to every year and find their peers and find a comfortable place to learn this where they don't feel overwhelmed.
Love it. That's awesome. And everyone can go to your website to sign up. Is that the best way?
Yeah. So marketingaiinstitute.com. There's a bunch of free stuff too. Like I think if this is the first time you're listening to this, I totally appreciate that it can be really overwhelming and kind of daunting. So I would say ease yourself into it. We've got a book, Marketing Artificial Intelligence. You can read it. It's relevant to anybody. It's not just a marketing book, but we have a monthly or a weekly newsletter on Tuesdays. We have our Marketing AI Show podcast that's become quite popular. And we just analyze like the biggest news in AI for the week and try and make it understandable to business people. So there's plenty of free stuff. And then we, like I said, we have that intro to AI class that I teach every few weeks on Zoom. That's free. You can get to that from the website too. So yeah, marketinginstitute.com is sort of the home base for all that stuff.
Well, Paul, this has been fantastic. I learned a ton. Our audience will learn a ton when this episode drops in a couple of weeks. We're excited about the conference. I think Taylor and I need to make our way up there next September. Yeah. But we'll get you out of here on this. Couple rapid fire questions, and then we'll some free publicity to either a Cleveland restaurant or some your OU favorites back in the day. But first rapid fire question, best piece of advice you've ever received?
I would struggle to come up with someone I actually know who's given me great advice. Like, I don't know. I think about this. But there's a kind of a thing I sort of have lived by in business. And that actually is from Alan Turing, who's kind of considered like the father of AI. You can watch Imitation Game is a movie about Alan Turing's life. But he said, those who can imagine anything can create the impossible. And I've always kind of lived by that. It's like, you know, when I was coming out of school, it's like, why, you know, somebody from OU, there's got all these people came out of Ivy League schools and all these brilliant people. Like, why should I be able to figure out a different kind of agency to build? Or why should I be the one that like builds an AI institute? And I always just took it like, well, why not? Like, no one else is doing it. Like, I'll just do it. And it's sort of what I try and impart on my kids is like, you can do anything. Like, it doesn't matter where you come from or what your educational background is. It's just like, look at things differently, connect some dots, and you can do whatever you want to do. And so it's in our book. It's a quote at the end of our book, actually. So that's kind of like advice I sort of live by.
I love it. That's great. Opposite, what is the worst piece of advice you've ever received?
Similar. Like, I would really struggle to answer that one. I don't know if I just don't leave mind space for bad advice. And so I don't have it floating around up there, but there's really nothing that comes
to the top of my head. You could take a different approach where, you know, what is some of the common advice that we hear in our world or our zeitgeist that you think,
I think there's a misperception of what success is. Like, yeah. I've always struggled with this one. So I think, especially as you're coming up as an entrepreneur, people always want to know like, well, what's revenue up to, or how many employees do you have? Like, it's always about some numbers game. And for me in life, very early on, I lost a couple of people at very early ages that were very important to me. And you just sort of like had this like perspective, like out of this pain came this great perspective in my late 20s that success had nothing to do with how many employees I had or how much revenue we had. It's like, am I happy? Like, am I enjoying my life? Am I spending time with my family? Am I growing a business that supports other people's families? And who cares if it's 10 people or 100 people? Like, as long as I'm still seeing my kids at night and help, you know, providing for these other families, like, that was success to me. And so I just felt like as an entrepreneur, even as a, you know, a business person, just don't let other people define success for you. It is not, you get to define your own success, basically, is sort of like the, don't let other people define it for you. You get bad advice if you're being told it's about how much money you make or, you know, how many employees you have.
Yeah, 100%. I love it. Besides your own, what is your favorite book?
Genius Makers by Cade Metz is probably like certainly the most influential book in my life over the last couple of years.
Awesome. Who, last one, and then we'll get to the restaurants. Who inspires you?
I mean, kind of cliche, but I'd say like my mom and dad. Like, I always looked up to them. They're good people, work hard, take care of their family. So yeah, my parents.
Love it. Yeah, not cliche at all. It's great. Okay, favorite restaurants. You can choose. You can go north or south, Cleveland or OU or both.
So the restaurant I frequent the most would be Joe's Deli in Rocky River, Ohio.
We got that on Wednesday. You are the second person to say Joe's Deli.
Oh, is that right? Yeah, it's a very popular like breakfast spot, but it's got awesome food. It's a couple minutes from my house, so it's probably our favorite.
Nice. What if you could only eat one thing in Athens, what would you eat?
Pita pit. Every time I go to Athens, I have to get pita pit.
I love it.
Or awesome. Actually, no, let me take that back. Bagel Street Deli.
Yeah. Yep. You next time you're in Columbus, we got to go to the new Jackie O's if you haven't been. It's amazing.
Okay. Nice.
It's amazing. And they have a Bagel Street Deli like truck there. It feels like you're in Athens.
Awesome.
Paul, where can everybody follow you, find you, socials, website, all that good stuff?
Twitter/X and LinkedIn are probably the two social places I'm most active.
Awesome. Okay, sweet. Well, Paul, this has been fantastic, man. I appreciate you coming on the podcast, and good luck with everything this year. And Taylor and I will see you at the conference in September.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, man.
Thanks for tuning into this episode of the Rust Belt Rundown. Make sure you check us out at rustbeltrecruiting.com. The Rust Belt Rundown is available wherever you listen to your podcasts. Make sure to hit that subscribe button and click on 5 stars if you enjoyed this episode. See you next time.